720 WGN. John Landecker, welcome you back to the program. Rich Lenkoff, attorney, capital member, Downey and Lenkoff, co-host of Legal Face-Off here at WGN Radio. But we're not having a legal face-off, are we, Rich?
We are not. Well, not yet. We'll see how the appearance goes. I got to be on my toes, you know.
Yeah, I hear you. I played a little bit of Drake there because one of the stories that's come before me is, I believe it's a class action lawsuit against Spotify. Am I correct about that?
A proposed class action.
Oh, proposed. Yes. Okay. What would have to happen? What's the process then?
Well, you ask the court to recognize a class of litigants who are similarly situated to you. Mm-hmm. And if the court agrees that there are multiple plaintiffs who have the same allegations against a single defendant, then the court certifies the class. So, you know, this plaintiff, whose name is RBX, has asked the court to certify the class, but that hasn't happened yet.
And this is specifically, well, they're using Drake as an example, right? I mean, Spotify's got every kind of music you can imagine, but it seems to be this in this article that the main brunt of this is directed, but not necessarily, it's not directed at Drake. It's directed at Spotify, which which has billions of streams. I just can't wrap my head around that. It's just 37 billion streams. International.
Right. So every time, yeah, it's the biggest. Go ahead, John. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's the biggest platform out there. You know, the biggest platform from which consumers consume music. And a stream is basically every time a song is played, that's considered a stream. In this case, according to the complaint that I read, the plaintiff is a rapper named RBX, who sued Spotify in California, claiming that Spotify is allowing billions of fake streams every month. And the problem with fake streams is that they make artists like Drake look more popular than they are, which in turn makes Spotify a lot of money. And the allegation goes that smaller artists, like the plaintiff in this case, say they lose money because these fake streams take a bigger share of, you know, a limited royalty pool.
Pardon my ignorance, but how can you fake a stream? I mean, it's coming to you through your device. What? It's fraudulent, but how do they pull that off? Do you know?
Well, they're alleging that some of the data is fake.
Oh.
That, you know, Spotify either knows or is negligent in not knowing that these fake bots are generating streams. And, you know, they're doing nothing about it because, again, it earns Spotify a lot of money. Every time there's a stream, Spotify earns some money.
This article says a 2019 Rolling Stone report noted that fake streams could be costing artists $300 million a year, which obviously is a lot. So can you explain to me how artists are paid per play, I guess, for lack of a better term, on Spotify? I mean, we're not talking about a physical analog piece of music. We're talking, you know, a digital stream.
Right. And by the way, I want to also just explain, you know, in addition to your question about how do you fake a stream. So in addition to, you know, the data being fake, what the allegation is that there are bots mm-hmm. that are listening in quotation marks to these songs over and over again. So, you know, instead of actual human beings listening to these songs,
okay,
you know, listening to the streams, there are, you know, there's software that allows bots to listen to them, therefore, you know, generating income every time there's a stream.
So what's next? I mean, it's not a class action yet, but it would seem to me that with billions of streams and somebody having a cause, if you will, that there certainly would be enough grounds to be able to pull something like that off. Or am I wrong?
Sure. No, I mean, for sure. See, and, you know, bots have been around actually for a while, so I think there's enough evidence there to at least survive, you know, an initial motion to dismiss. To answer your other question, here's how it works. Every time a song gets streamed on Spotify or some other account, the artist earns a small payment. It's usually something like, you know, 3/10 of a cent. It's very small. But, you know, when there's millions and billions of streams, that adds up, you know, quickly. Especially, and that's why Drake is used as an example. Drake is streamed, you know, literally billions of times.
Yeah, I'm not that familiar with Drake, but I went to get some of his music, and I had to stay away from a lot of lyrical content. Let's just put it that way.
So, you're not streaming Drake. I'm shocked.
More with Rich when we come back on 720 WGN. Yes, that's where we are, WGN. John Landecker at 819 with Rich Linkoff. I'm going to change lanes here and leave Spotify over there. This is sort of a downer, It is a total downer, especially considering that the World Series just ended. But this is this a case where an ex-wife of Eric Kay, who played for the Angels, alleges that the team failed him amid drug addiction, and he is now not alive. And when did this start? When did this case begin?
Yeah, well, the trial began last week in Orange County. Very interesting legal questions. We talked about it today on our podcast, Legal Face Off. It's actually, so the name of the pitcher was Tyler Skaggs, all right? He died in 2019 from fentanyl, and you know, he mixed that with oxycodone and alcohol. He died while on a team road trip, again, pitching for the Angels. Now, the pill, it was proved during a criminal case, came from a guy named Eric Kay, who you mentioned, who was the team's communication director at the time. He was convicted and sentenced to 22 years in prison for supplying these drugs to Tyler Skaggs. That was, you know, 6-7 years ago. Now, what happened last week is Skaggs' family, the deceased pitcher's family, is suing the LA Angels, who Skaggs pitched for. And the allegation is that the team knew that this one individual was supplying drugs and did nothing to protect their son, their husband. And the legal question is, you know, to what extent does the team owe a duty of care to their employee who had addiction issues by allowing him access to these drugs? So that's ultimately what the jury will decide. There's lots of evidence that they, you know, that they were aware. And certainly the fact that the employee was convicted is, you know, a big part of that evidence.
Well, the Camilla Kay, the ex-wife, has previously said that she has seen Angels players partying, drinking, passing around pills on the team plane when she traveled with her then husband. If that's true, if that's allegedly true, then somebody's turning their back on it and not doing anything about it. And they might have, I don't know, it might have some case, but it just seems to me this is what, from 2019 and it's happening now, with an ex-wife, where do you think this is headed?
Well, the ex-wife's testimony was damaging, but it's only one piece of evidence. There's evidence from, for example, current players like Mike Trout, who, you know, support the team somewhat. Listen, it's ultimately, it seems like a complicated case. It's a really simple case. The question is notice. Lots of cases come down to notice. You know, if you get bit by a dog. The question is whether the owner had notice of the dog's predilection. So in this case, it's really a notice question. Is the team responsible for the private drug use of a player if it's proven that they were aware of it and did nothing to, you know, prevent these kind of things from happening on at work? Or was this one employee, kind of a rogue employee, was he acting outside the scope of his employment when he was supplying drugs? There's no question he was supplying drugs. That's already been litigated. He's in prison for that. The question is, to what extent was that known by the Angels, and what duty did they violate, if any, by preventing him from supplying drugs to their employee?
Is there anything to the thought that it depends on whether or not they were in a building of the, you know, on Angels property, or were they out on the street, or out somewhere where, you know, there's no Angel business around them?
For sure. No, it's a great question. I mean, if the more the Angels can prove that the drug use was off duty, after hours, off the physical premises, not in the clubhouse, not on the team plane, that makes the nexus between the employee and the pitcher much more distance. Of course, if this was happening, you know, in front of the owner, in front of the manager, in the clubhouse, in the dugout, that is a far, you know, much closer connection, and it'll be easier to prove liability.
Do you have any idea how long this is going to last? Because you said it just started.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll go fairly quickly. You know, I know there's a list of witnesses, but I expect that the case will wrap up in a couple of weeks at most.
That seems speedy. When you hear about trials and lawsuits, it would wrap up in a couple of weeks. But if anybody knows, it's you. Thanks, Rich, for being with us. It's always good to talk to you.
It's always a privilege. Thanks so much for having me, as always.
You bet. Rich Linkoff.